Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, it's Steve again, and today we're talking with Dr. Tim McNamara. And so what I'd like to do is have Dr. Tim talk to you a little bit about his background, and then we're going to talk about a little bit of everything that he does. So let's go ahead. So how are you doing today, Tim?
Really well, Steve, yourself?
I'm doing great, thank you. So tell me a little bit about you and your background.
Well, my experience in education, I got out of undergrad back in 1975. Started as a full-time teacher and coach at a high school in suburban Buffalo, New York, and followed a path of with teaching and with supervising that took me roughly around 32 years. During which time, I went from teacher to team leader to curriculum coordinator for K-12 math, and finally to the college level, where I worked as an assistant professor at a local community college in Western New York. When I retired in 2007, I thought I had done just about everything that I wanted to do in education, but turns out that a friend of mine involved me with some consulting work that I had not anticipated through some of the workshops that were available in our local area. And I came to find that I did enjoy sharing ideas with teachers. One thing kind of led to another. Some folks from out of state, in fact, from Southern Illinois, somehow got wind of my work, invited me out to work with them. So I found myself working from state to state. And I now work through ASCD and as well as private consulting, working with school districts and with teachers around the country. I have some plans to be heading overseas in the next couple of months. But bottom line is that I'm really excited about some of the work that I'm involved with, and certainly honored and blessed certainly to work with so many wonderful people nationwide. So I'm certainly happy to be here.
Well, excellent. Well, I'm glad to have you, and I appreciate you talking. Now, I do want you to talk briefly, because you've left some neat awards out. So can you mention those real quick?
Gee. Well, like anything else in life, I'm convinced that no one really works in a vacuum. Certainly, you know, any success that comes along is the result of people being very patient with me on the front side of a very, very steep learning curve. But I was blessed to work with wonderful people and with wonderful students, and was nominated for the Presidential Award as the Math Teacher of the Year in New York State back in 1990, made it to the final three, lost in 90, lost in 91, as, again, one of the finalists. In 92, I didn't even make the cut, and in 93, was convinced that I was done and I was not going to do it ever again, and was gently convinced by those who know me well to try it one more time. And in 93, I was honored and blessed to be chosen as presidential awardee in the state of New York. I was the first one from the upstate region, you know, away from New York City, to be so honored.
Yeah.
And had a chance in April of 94 to spend a week in Washington. Went to the White House, met President Clinton, met the fellow awardees from around the country, had an opportunity to speak with people, you know, on the Hill at Congress. Talking about issues that apply to mathematics. And basically,
excellent.
Kind of expanded from that point forward on a national basis. And was, as I said, I can't thank enough the people who have been kind to me over the years and allowed me to develop as a person and as an educator.
Something that you said is I'm going to pick up on, which is, you know, we are talking math, and that's one of the things that you work with. And so let me use that to kind of segue into something. When you think about kids and their needs in mathematics, I mean, what do you think the greatest need is that you see that most kids need help with?
To be perfectly honest, I would hope that students could take a basis of fundamental learning and be able to develop themselves as individuals. And by that I mean there's certainly fundamentals in any walk of life that need to be addressed and need to be solid with every child. certainly the basic number operations and, things along those nature. But when you're talking about the 21st century, and you're talking about students who are coming to us as kindergartners, in today's day and age, they're going to be graduating 13 years from now. So the question has to be, of course, what will the world look like 13 years from now? It'll certainly be different than what it looks like right now. And having said that, the kinds of skills that students need beyond the fundamentals that are necessary for success are the kinds of skills that they would learn through problem solving, through being able to deal with novel situations, to be creative in terms of coming up with solutions to problems that come along. The issues that are happening in today's day and age may not necessarily be those that are going to be the case in the year, say, 2026. That said, we need to give students the opportunity to grow as individuals, to develop their talents in all different ways, and to find mathematics as part of that learning process.
So when we're talking about doing, working with and students in mathematics, and obviously that's going to lend itself to my next question, which are the teachers, because that's who you're working with, are the teachers. So in addressing the needs of children in mathematics, what area do you think the teachers may have the greatest need?
Well, that's an excellent question. My sense is that teachers, and I hesitate to say this because I think there's a great deal to be said certainly for the data that we get through assessment. But teachers, if we could just kind of get past the idea that assessment is the ultimate measuring stick, teachers need to develop their skills just like students do. And by that I mean to become actually students of mathematics. And that means, in the case of actually teaching, to be able to look at math in more than one way. Textbooks certainly are wonderful tools and certainly are, give us the resources at least to start the conversation with children. But that said, there are a number of ways that problems can be addressed and problems can be solved. And knowing that there's not just one particular way of approaching or solving a problem, we want the right answer every single time. Don't misunderstand. We want the correct answer. But there are a number of paths that teachers can take and students can take to get to that one answer. So that being said, teachers really need to be able to see and perform and apply in more than one way. And to never, much like a physician does, never stop practicing teaching. That is to say, always be learning about the ways that students learn. Always be learning about the mathematics that they teach to see how the pieces fit in a variety of different ways. Those are the kinds of creative avenues teachers should take to be able to anticipate where students are coming from to be able to address their needs the most efficient way possible.
Thanks. It's in having that conversation. It's one of the things that trying to target that if you're working with because obviously like with kids, adults have their needs. And that's why I was just curious what you thought.
Oh, yes.
Was an area that you could really focus your attention on.
Well, my hope is that teachers understand that, especially with the evolving technologies, you have students who come to your room now with the abilities to be able to do things technologically that, frightening teachers is not the correct word, but certainly it has a way of kind of intimidating people because of the way the technology is kind of evolving and the rapidity with which things are evolving, with children. Students today are not better or worse than they were, say, 20 years ago. They're just different. And they're different to a large extent because of the technology, the way things are. Teachers would really be well served to be able to, if they can, as I mentioned about continuing to learn, if they continue to learn about ways in which the technology can impact their teaching. We've seen the evolution, for example, over time of, say, the graphing calculator or the smart board. Items of those nature. That's always going to continue to evolve to the point that, say, 10 years from now, the smart board will be considered to be a dinosaur.
Right.
So teachers need to continue to learn and stay on that learning curve just as they will be learning in terms of what are the kinds of ways that really kind of engage students and get them excited about their learning.
Going back to something that you said about them being students of math themselves as the adults and learning. What's funny is that I tell my kids my stories about my TI-30 and you know, the nice little wedge shape that it was. They're like, it was...
Well, I remember the first time we got a calculator in our school, and this was back in the late 70s. These things were like doorstops. They were literally. It took two hands to carry them. They probably cost $600. They originally came out from Hewlett Packard. They had a small display on them that was yellow with black lettering.
Awesome.
And I remember all of us kind of crowding around to look at the small screen, and somebody said, "Try 3 + 5." And so we pushed the 3 + 5 and hit equal and waited and waited. And when 8 showed up, 20 seconds later, we all went, "Oh, look at this wonderful machine." I mean, now think about what we have now. We have literally in our hands, with cell phones and with graphing calculators, and you name it, we have literally portable computers. I mean, and computers which you know, within a 2-year window will become obsolete. I mean, you know, That's what I'm talking about in terms of the evolution of the technology, and that's where teachers really, I think, would benefit strongly from not only seeing the mathematics in different ways, but also how it applies to being able to deliver the mathematics and the instruction technologically as well.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Let's use that as a segue into the classes you've been working with our teachers on and our administrators on has been called Building the Instructional Toolbox. Right. And now you're going to soon, in working with the teachers and administrators, you're soon be visiting them in their schools and working with them and the kids. And tell me a little bit about that title, Building the Instructional Toolbox.
Well, kind of stepping back just for a second, it's important for everyone to understand that the Common Core, and they'll see some things that are written, certainly the articles have not been the most flattering, you know, that you read, whether posted or in print, but... the Common Core should be kind of separated from the Common Core assessment. You know, I know that there are various states, and Georgia being one of them, that have opted kind of away from the PARC assessment, but have kept the Common Core pieces in place. Nobody seems to want to kind of lower the standards the way they have been nationwide. But, you know, the Common Core has some good standards in place. So having said that, you have to look at the Common Core from the standpoint, okay, it's a content tool, yes, but it also, when you read between the lines of the Common Core, you're talking about instructional approaches that really have not been addressed heretofore. That is to say, looking at problems from the standpoint of, okay, we could do this problem maybe not only through an abstract means, you know, solve for X, you know, algebraically, but can we do this problem perhaps using hands-on tools? Can we do this problem visually? Can we do this problem using a calculator? In other words, you have a number of avenues open to us. So the idea behind the actual building of the instructional toolbox goes directly parallel to the Common Core itself. And that is to say, not only is the content being ratcheted up, but the pedagogy needs to be expanded as well to take full advantage of the total impact of what Common Core truly is.
Excellent. So as a result of the people who are taking your classes, one of the words that comes to mind, because I participate in your class, and you know, and I was in there.
Was that you back there?
That was me back there, yes. And I taught high school history for 9 years, and I was, not a math teacher, I guess is my point. And what was really awesome is that when I left that day, I was telling people, I think I could teach elementary math. And and what word comes to mind is engaging. And
right. And
I wanted you to talk about that a little bit, because the teachers were definitely engaged, and I could see that you're teaching them different hands-on activities. And I mean, there were adults using scissors and working with blocks and paper clips and tape and different manipulatives like that. And I just wanted you to talk about engaging for a minute.
Well, the name of the game, I think, with any class is the more students who can participate, who can be actively involved in the learning, the faster the class goes, the better the class goes, the more the students get out of the time they spent in that classroom. Engagement really kind of lends itself to the idea of discovery. And by discovery, I mean, rather than, for example, telling students up front, okay, today's formula is, if you have a well-crafted lesson, and teachers certainly know this, a well-crafted lesson should kind of lead itself to discovery on the student's standpoint so that they're the ones who, quote-unquote, discover the information themselves, as opposed to being told, or please just tell us what the formula is. We want to try to get away from that and get more towards the students actually figuring out or seeing how things fit together on their own. That having said, when students discover, they tend to retain. And when they retain, you don't have to spend as much time toward the end of any course, and certainly the end of course tests are a major player now here in the state. Rather than spending time having to kind of go back and reteach, students tend to hold those ideas longer, which means that you don't have to spend as much time with the fundamental aspects that need to be addressed before you actually take a test like that. With less memorizing comes, in fact, more thinking. And thinking is really what you want to be talking about, whether it's math or it's ELA or basically any of the major subjects. You want the kids to be engaged in the actual cognitive processes, which can, in fact, be induced through a variety of means. We're talking about learning styles, which can be hands-on, they can be visual, they can be kinesthetic, they can be musical. But, all the kinds of learning theories that we're talking about in terms of getting to more students more often, that's really what engagement is all about.
Excellent. In many of my classes, or one of the things you try and a lot of people's memories of classes are the idea of plugging and chugging, and
there's a place for that. I mean, we can do that, but not every single day. It's interesting from a teaching standpoint. This gets back to Common Core and the idea of more teaching skills. I use the analogy because of my background does include a little bit of athletics. I play a little bit of ball in my background, and one of the things we learned is that if you're facing someone who throws nothing but fastballs all the time, pretty soon you figure that out. And basically it's a matter of time before you get to that pitcher. Well, good pitchers tend to throw a variety of things at you. They'll throw fastballs, they'll throw curves, they'll throw knuckleballs, they'll throw whatever. If a teacher is predictable, that's the absolute worst thing, because now you have students who kind of know the drill, and they check out on you, whether they do so consciously or not. They're not really going to listen to what you have to say, from an auditory standpoint. It's just not going to process. So what I try to explain to teachers when I do workshops is the idea that, come at the information from different directions. In other words, try to get kids challenged from the standpoint of, okay, what do you see here? Or what did you notice in this pattern? Or what did you notice when you went from this concrete idea to the abstraction? What connection did you make? Those are the kinds of ways in which teachers can really make a positive impact on students. But the idea that you be predictable is what you want to avoid as a teacher, because once you are predictable, game over. They have shut you down. That's just the way it is.
It's unfortunate also. So you have to have more. You have to have activities and different approaches.
You have to have
and
more
so
quills in your
there we
in
go.
Your quiver. That's right. Or more arrows, I should say, in your quiver. That's for sure.
thank you. I'm stumbling because I got to say this, and for what anyone would respond to this, but there was a kids show over the last bunch of years, and I think it may even still be on, called Barney. I don't know if you're familiar with the show Barney.
Purple Dinosaur.
Yeah, exactly. And they had a song called The Barney Bag, and the Barney Bag was a bag that he would bring out that had all kinds of different things to try and figure out how to engage the kids instead of, because they'd all be bored. They're sitting around bored. Wow, let's get the Barney Bag out. And so, sorry. So you're talking about the teachers developing their own Barney Bag for mathematics.
There's all kinds of, I saw the other day one of our participants was talking amongst the group about the use of rap music to pull some of the ideas together. I mean, the idea being that you let the kids be creative on their own to try to pull some things together is not a bad idea, because it gets back to the ownership idea or the retention idea or the engagement idea. All of those are kind of the various sides of the same coin. The kids to really kind of, take ownership of the process. That's really what you're looking for.
That's awesome.
That's right.
Well, as we bring us to the end, one of the things that I like to ask people is, if teachers attend, administrators attend your sessions, mm-hmm. educators attend your sessions, what's one thing you would like, at the very least, for them to take away?
Well, I, as I mentioned before, I've been very lucky to have a lot of good people around me to kind of guide me and show me a number of things that do work in the classroom. And one of the things that I've noticed, whether it's my own experience or in my travels when I've had an opportunity to visit classrooms, is that there are certain commonalities about really, really good teaching. One of those commonalities is the idea that those who are really good at their craft are not afraid to fail. You know, they're willing to take chances. I'm not saying going out on a limb every single time. I'm simply saying that if you truly want to be great, you've got to get kind of away from your comfort zone. I use the analogy of ships in port. You know, that every ship is safe in port, but the question has to be, why do we have ships in the first place? I mean,
right.
that's really the point. You know, there are certain kind of safe lessons that we can teach on a daily basis and kind of move our way through the year, but is being safe going to be the most effective way to get children engaged? You have to kind of extend yourself. You really can't just be satisfied with what you're doing. It gets back to the idea of practice teaching. You've got to continually look for new technologies, new approaches, new ideas that kind of pull ideas together that, you know, in different ways that you maybe didn't expect before. That's the creativity aspect. We're not going to find a cure for cancer from being safe. We want kids to extend themselves and be creative and look in different ways at the same old problems.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really kind of the way to do it. So one of the things is to not be afraid to fail and not be afraid to kind of let go on occasion. Students are naturally curious, and my sense is that we should try to embrace that. Students are naturally very creative, and my sense is that we should try to nurture that. And as we all know, students are naturally our future, so we need to prepare them for it. What that future looks like is difficult to try to figure out sometimes, but by playing it safe, I think we're doing them a serious disservice.
I would think also that that idea of taking chances, that's scary to someone who's staying a chapter ahead of the kids.
One step ahead of the posse.
Right.
What's your Sundance? That's right.
Exactly. So you've got to, going back to what you said earlier, is you've got to be a student of mathematics where you're figuring out the ways that you can take chances and encourage them to think and use their ideas to help them discover what it's all about.
Never play safe. You know, the fun part about teaching is knowing where the kids were when the school year began and knowing that when they are done at the end of the time they're spent with you, that they're better that they're better students and they're better people. That's
excellent.
And those aha moments you get along the way when the light goes on, there's not enough money in the world that they can pay you for that. It's the most wonderful feeling in the world to see the kids get it.
And that's what it's all about.
That's right. You know, one of the aspects of practice teaching, and I mentioned before about the analogy with medicine. Unfortunately, in teaching, we have a sense that we have all the answers, and hence, because of that, we tend to look at our own four walls as our own personal duchies. And what I found, at least through my learning from education generally, is that I became a lot more effective as a teacher when I began to kind of let my guard down, again, not being afraid to fail and not being afraid to ask questions. Asking people who I trusted or people who I knew might give me the right answer to go and seek their advice and seek their counsel. And to try to, like good doctors do, try to find the right diagnosis for students, what's best for students. Because
yes.
The bottom line is that no matter what you're talking about or where you're talking, the bottom line should always be student learning. That should be number one priority for all of us. You know, that being so important, it's important for us as teachers to utilize every possible avenue to be able to help students succeed and to move forward. And in that regard, I think we lose a valuable resource if we don't ask people around us who we trust the right questions at the right time.
Well, I think that's awesome because if we don't have that mindset, if you will, then what happens is that we get caught up in, whether we say the words or not, we're starting to to act like I taught it and they didn't get it, therefore.
Right. And then, so too bad.
Too bad,
you know, that's not good enough, right?
Right.
It's the old cartoon of the two boys and the dog who's sitting there, and the one boy says to the other, "I just taught my dog Spot how to whistle," and the other boy says, "I don't hear Spot whistling," and the first boy says, I said I taught him. It didn't say he learned it.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. Yes. Didn't say that. Yeah.
That's right. I taught him, and that's good enough. No, it's not good enough. We want our students to learn. That should be always the bottom line. So what do we need to know as teachers to be able to make them move forward and to help them improve along the way? That should be our number one priority.
Oh, I like that very much. Well, Tim, I greatly appreciate your time today, and I'm looking forward to working with you more, and looking forward to the impact that you're going to have on our teaching staff and so forth, and helping the kids get it with the light bulb going on.
Yes, thanks.
So thank you very much.
My pleasure, sir.
Have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
Hello, listeners. We would like to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. Check back often for updates and new material.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the heart of Georgia Precinct.